Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to present a review and analysis of a book that I believe is an extremely important book. It is also an altogether terrifying book, and it is a Nazi tract published by what is arguably the most important domestic Nazi group, the National Alliance. Specifically, this book is put out by National Vanguard Books, which is the publishing arm of the National Alliance. I would note that they have put out other books as well. Their best-known tract is the Turner Diaries, which has served as the role model for the Order, a Nazi group that, among other things, assassinated Alan Berg in the 1980s, a Denver talk show host. It also has served, allegedly, as the role model for the Oklahoma City bombing as well. To a certain extent, at least, we have seen Turner Diaries, allegedly a novel, turn into fact, turn into reality. National Vanguard Books also puts out a book called Hunter about a Nazi assassin who goes around killing people of color and interracial couples in particular. With the O.J. Simpson case in California, we've seen Hunter come to light to a certain extent as well. If that appears to be a drivel to the uninitiated, I've done an extensive amount of work on the book on the O.J. Simpson case, and it would appear that basically the Nazi group CAUSE, standing for Christian Aryan Underground Special Enforcers, a group that in many ways has evolved out of the Order, were the true authors of the killing of Ron and Nicole and the framing of O.J. Simpson. That group had also apparently penetrated law enforcement, and among the goals of Operation Thunderbolt, as the killing of Ron and Nicole and the framing of O.J. was termed by that group, was the discreditation of law enforcement in general and the LAPD in particular. It was also alleged by Skinner, the anonymous informant, that that same group pulled off the Oklahoma City bombing as well. There are numerous tapes available from Spitfire dealing with the O.J. Simpson case and the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers. With Hunter and the Turner Diaries, both books put out by National Vanguard Books, having become reality to a certain extent, I think another book put out by National Vanguard Books entitled Serpent's Walk deserves very special consideration. Serpent's Walk is about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS who infiltrate the United States Army, who put together a huge flight capital organization, or a capital organization which buys into the American opinion-forming media and sways American public opinion in their direction. Following a biological attack on the United States and much of the rest of the world by genetically engineered viruses ostensibly of Russian origin, which wipes out much of the world's population and much of the American population, including the president and vice president of the United States, the Speaker of the House, who is in league with this Nazi underground, becomes president of the United States and invites them into a governing coalition, and they take over the United States. Serpent's Walk was authored by someone who writes under the name Randolph D. Calverhall, Calverhall. Serpent's Walk was put out in soft cover by National Vanguard Books, copyright 1991, ISBN number 0-937944-05-X. The address for National Vanguard Books, I will give this now, is P.O. Box 330, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946. That address again, P.O. Box 330, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946. Now, an emphatic caveat. This is the publishing arm, National Vanguard Books, whose address I just gave, of what is arguably the most important and influential and quite possibly the most deadly domestic Nazi group. These are not the Boy Scouts of America. So an emphatic caveat. One should be extremely careful with a capital E and a capital C. Before contacting this organization, one should go in with one's eyes open. At the same time, it is my opinion that Serpent's Walk is far more than the novel it purports to be. I believe it to be a manifesto. I believe it to be a blueprint for what is going on and what is going to go on, much as the Turner Diaries appears to be. For that reason, I believe it is altogether important to study this book, which I believe to be a vitally important book. The back cover of Serpent's Walk reads as follows. The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. When I read Serpent's Walk, I was stunned. And I believe then and I believe now that this is far more than a novel. One, certainly anyone familiar with the real history of the Third Reich, not the pop history in which, once upon a time there was a bad man named Adolf Hitler who hypnotized all the Germans, made them all go crazy, and along came the Allies, and that was the end of that. In fact, as I have discussed in numerous programs, and this will appear to be crazy to the uninitiated, but the documentation is there and available from Spitfire, the Third Reich went underground and has perpetuated itself in the Cold War period, and now it would appear that what I have termed the Underground Reich is now reemerging into public view a half century after its alleged demise. Again, that'll appear to be utter drivel to the uninitiated. The documentation is there, and there are numerous tapes available from Spitfire which discuss that documentation. One of the things that impressed itself upon me when I read Serpent's Walk, again, I believe it's far more than a novel. I believe it's a blueprint for what is going on and what will go on, and I believe it's a manifesto, was that many of the elements discussed in Serpent's Walk are readily recognizable to a serious student of the history of the Third Reich. And one of those is the altogether remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, literally the underground component of the economic component, I should say, of the Underground Reich. And as I've indicated in the past, I believe that when the history of the world is written, I believe the Bormann organization will prove to have been the dominant element in human affairs on this planet. It's not a particularly appetizing prospect, but as what I like to think I am, which is an objective analyst, I believe that is what is going to happen, barring a sea change in world political affairs. While it might not necessarily be etched in stone, I believe a great many people would have to act bravely and unselfishly and intelligently, and I just don't see that happening in order to resist the incredible power and deadliness of the remarkable Bormann organization and its related elements. In this particular book, some of the characters discussed here are named Wrench, Lessing, and Mulder. Mulder is the head of the Underground Reich in this group, which is called the Party of Humankind. That's the front organization for the Underground Reich. He also, Mulder is a, Hermann Mulder, as he's described here, is a direct blood descendant of Heinrich Müller, head of the Gestapo, who, as, again, serious students of the history of the Third Reich know, was not only the head of the Gestapo, but was the security director, for all I know, still is. I don't know if he's still alive. He certainly would be about the same age as Strom Thurmond, but he was the security director for the Bormann organization and the Third Reich in exile, and continued to command a deadly organization, the Gestapo, which also went underground and continued to function. Two of the main Nazi characters here are Wrench, also a fellow named Lessing, who was a former Green Beret who was hired as a mercenary by this Nazi group, initially a skeptic of the Party of Humankind and the Underground Reich. He later becomes a convert, and when they take over the United States, he becomes president of the United States, succeeding Jonas Outram, that's spelled Outram in this book, who is the Speaker of the House and the ally of the Underground Reich. Wrench here is describing to Lessing the history of the Third Reich's exile period and its underground capital organization. Quote, "In 1945, when Germany lost, two submarines arrived in Argentina. Some of the remaining senior officers of the SS were aboard. They brought money, lots of money, a good part of the treasury of the Third Reich. People thought it was lost or stolen down in Bavaria, but it wasn't. I've seen the movie," Lessing scoffed, "Martin Bormann and the Promised Land. It's true, though. You can read the historical stuff later if you want. Thanks, when I run out of comic books. It wasn't only Bormann. There were others," unquote. Seeing Lessing's look, Wrench hurried on. "They founded a colony, set up businesses, made connections. Later, they invested, linked up, and developed. They built a series of interlocking corporations. The post-war boom and the recovery of Germany helped these corporations become conglomerates, then huge international holding companies based in the goddamnedest places." And again, when I read this, I recognized the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization as the reality behind these words. Continuing, And then Lessing ironically scoffs, "The Nazi family Robinson," unquote. What? God, you're a comical a-hole. Yes, everything neat and tidy. Out of sight, away from the Jews and the Nazi hunters and their network of financial institutions and pressure groups. The Third World made it easier. There are fewer controls here, fewer restrictions, fewer checks, fewer regulations, fewer watchdog agencies, less hassle with privacy. You can spot outsiders coming, like that coal bird in the mango tree over there. He can see all around his nest, unquote. By the way, this is taking place in India. Continuing, Lessing looked but said nothing. Rentsch continued, "They, the SS and their descendants, made friends in local governments. The Third Worlders needed know-how, money, connections, and expertise." Skipping down, "The SS, what was left of it, had business objectives before and during World War II. When the war was lost, they just kept on, but from other places. Bogota, Asunción, Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Mexico City, Colombo, Damascus, Dhaka, you name it. They realized that the world is heading towards a corporocracy, 5 or 10 international super companies that will run everything worth running by the year 2100. Those super corporations exist now, and they're already dividing up the production and marketing of food, transport, steel and heavy industry, oil, the media, and other commodities. They're mostly conglomerates, with fingers in more than one pie. Some of them are owned now by the old money interests. The Japanese and various foreign cartels run others. The born-agains have a couple. The Jews and their buddies control some big ones, and we, the SS, have the say in 4 or 5. We've been competing for the past 60 years or so, and we're slowly gaining," unquote. "Lose the war, win the peace. Which ones do you button down Nazis own?" unquote. Lessing was interested in spite of himself. "I'll let Mulder tell you if he wants, but I'll give you an example, one I saw myself. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, not with bands and trumpets, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around, too. Not much, but a little so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats. Lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans. And we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes." And skipping down about that, those image changes and image changes and the rehabilitation of the images of the Third Reich, of the image of the Third Reich. "Give it time. Aside from the media, we've been buying up private schools and helping some public ones through philanthropic foundations and working on the churches and the born-agains." It is also Rentsch's contention here that this underground Reich, as he's talking about, controls many of the so-called neo-Nazis around the world. I personally don't like the term neo-Nazi. I think it tends to downgrade the significance. I refer to them as contemporary Nazis. They're simply the next generation. Lessing, and continuing with Serpent's Walk, Lessing picked irritably at his shirt, already stained with perspiration and sticking to his spine. "What about the neo-Nazis, the Missouri Seven, the gang who blew up the power station in Munich in 2040? Rentsch waved a manicured hand. "They're part of it. Every movement needs street troops. Our enemies are tough. We're tougher. Anyhow, there's no such thing as a neo-Nazi. You're either with us, or you're part of the problem." And I would note later that Mulder, again, the leader of this underground Reich, is described as a blood descendant of Heinrich Müller, the head of the Gestapo, and as indicated in a miscellaneous archive show entitled The Flight of the Wolf, an individual who went to work for U.S. intelligence and an individual who had engineered the escape of Adolf Hitler. Again, that'll appear to be utter madness to the uninitiated. I refer interested listeners to the archive show The Flight of the Wolf, available from Spitfire. And again, Heinrich Müller was the security director for the altogether remarkable and deadly Bormann organization. Skipping down in Serpent's Walk about Hermann Mulder. "Okay, I'll tell Mulder, but he won't like it, and Goddard'll beg for your expletive deleted on a plate." This is when Lessing basically simply wants to continue as a mercenary. "But Mulder's the boss. He's one of the directors. I don't mean a director of Indico. That's the company that Lessing was working as a mercenary for. They're just front men, but a descendant in the central directorate of the movement." And later, as a apparent Mossad agent. This book is virulently anti-Semitic, by the way. Later, Mulder is being threatened with blackmail by a quote, Zionist agent, unquote. We can also reveal your Nazi past, Herr Mueller. Herr Mueller, wasn't your grandfather one of the big fish who got away? Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo? What does that matter now? Mulder made an angry gesture of dismissal. And again, I would note that this is one of the reasons why I saw this book as far more than the novel it purports to be. I think it is a blueprint for what is going to happen and what is happening now, and a manifesto, and I think it's one of the most important books ever written. And it is an altogether terrifying document. One of the things that is discussed here is the infiltration of the United States National Security Establishment and government by agents of this underground Reich. And the 85 referred to here is a supercomputer run by the U.S. government. Suddenly, Lessing needed a drink, and craving he had not felt for months. Wait a minute. If this 85 could pick up on me, why can't your people use it to pick up on my marvelous Gap employers? Whoever they are, they're good. They programmed blind alleys and blocked access paths into 85, special codes, alarms that trip if you punch in the wrong password. We know because we lost an operative or two finding out. The ramifications were unsettling. Quote, if they're so clever, why don't they use it on you, on Kuhn, on Indico, on your movement? Mulder spread his short, spatulate fingers. Oh, they try, but we've got people with clearances as well. We've programmed 85 to shunt our sensitive data into dead files. It buries what we don't want seen. How about standard intelligence methods? Lessing asked. Richmond talked about Indico being odd, about looking into your operation later. He knows Kuhn. He knows me. Surely his people can put it together, unquote. They're on the perimeter, Mulder admitted. They know a little about us and about some of our front groups. They know a lot about the organizations we want them to see. Neo-Nazis, pre-Nazis, post-Nazis, paleo-Nazis, would-be Nazis, rightists, racists, survivalists, born-again fascists, and anthill of fringe groups. But the intelligence agencies, and the sects, and factions, and parties, and secret societies, are like dancers in a dark room. You bump up against somebody, feel the clothing, smell the cologne, maybe touch a bit of skin. They do the same. None of the dancers ever gets a complete picture of the others. The Zionists, the Americans, various European agencies all know we're here, but they don't know where, who, or how much. As far as our people can tell, the core of our structure is still secret, unquote. And later, again, following an attack, the spreading around in the world of a couple of genetically engineered viruses called Pakov and Starok, of apparent Russian origin in this manifesto, much of the world's population is wiped out, including much of the U.S. population in major urban centers. Note that in connection with the recent anthrax scare in Las Vegas involving an Aryan Nations operative named Larry Harris. The President and Vice President of the United States, the President here, predictably, given the ideological slant of the book, is President Rubin. Again, this is a very, very anti-Semitic book. But the President and Vice President of the United States are killed. And the Speaker of the House, who's an ally of the Party of Humankind, the front group for the Nazis in this book, becomes President of the United States and invites the Nazi group into a governing coalition. This is after Speaker of the House becomes President and declares martial law. Mulder said, ever heard of Jonas Utrum, the Speaker of the House of Representatives? Yes, of course. Well, he's President pro tem now. Old Rubin and his cabinet drank water with their breakfast in Washington, D.C. The vice president had a shower and a morning gargle in New York. Now they're all dead. By American law, the presidency passes to the Speaker of the House. My God. Wrench looked up and said, one thing the establishment never figured on. They threw Outram that post like you'd toss a bone to a barking dog. A little present to the opposition to make things look democratic. Now I'll bet they're sorry. He began to laugh shakily. Skipping down, most of the government in Washington is gone, Mulder said. Who knows how many thousands, maybe millions. But Cheyenne Mountain has its own internal water supply and the country's defense command is safe. The Army's declared martial law and called up all the National Guard units they can still reach. They're trying to put it back together. And you're going to see Outram, sir? He wants to see me, the movement, rather, all of the so-called right-wing parties. Get ready, we leave tonight, unquote. I would note that as they take over the country, the Party of Humankind, the front group for the Underground Reich, works with a militant black Muslim separatist named Khalifa, and they help him set up a homeland in Africa for black Americans, for African Americans to return to. I see certain parallels between that and Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam, which has actively collaborated with some white supremacist elements in the past. I would also note the superficial similarity, at least, between the political and economic program of the Party of Humankind, the front group of the Underground Reich, and the politics of the Republican Party and Newt Gingrich. Again, Wrench is talking here. Wrench is one of the Nazi operatives. We trade, yes, but the party doesn't rule anyone anywhere. There are sister organizations in several European countries, but no international superstructure beyond a liaison committee. We have less real power even in America than the old political parties did. Local autonomy, that's us. And skipping down, things are different now. This isn't the 20th century. We don't want secret police and five-year plans. We're for free enterprise and personal incentives. We do support the coordination of major economic production, what the Germans call Gleichschaltung. We're experimenting with that. The human race must manage its resources for the future. But we leave smaller businesses and industries alone. They're more free now than they were under the democracy of the old USA, which was really bureaucratized socialism. We have less taxes, less control, fewer restrictions. America's government more truly implements the will of the people now than it has for generations. There are protests, we hear. Sectors that disagree with you? Sure, there always are. Fat cats kicked off the gravy train, welfare frauds made to work for their money, middlemen who actually have to produce something useful for a change. We're setting reasonable rates of interest, stopping the siphoning off of wealth by users and money men, changing over from a paper economy to one based on real goods. That's only for starters. We're also standardizing the law, doing away with injustices, cutting down top-heavy government, training the jobless, improving education, and helping farmers keep their land. Again, sounds rather like an idealized version of what Newt Gingrich and company are proposing and have been espousing today. And the novel ends, again, with Lessing becoming President of the United States and the Nazis taking over the United States. It was too late to return to the White House to change clothes. He, that's Lessing, had Max call Lisa on the limo's vidphone and tell her to meet him at the Herman Mulder Memorial Stadium. Then he lay back and relaxed as best he could. As they drew up, he could hear the massed choruses singing Banners High, what older people still called the Horst Wessel song. It didn't sound as heroic in English as it did in German, but it did make an excellent anthem for the Aryan world. A chorus of Sieg Heil roared up to meet the wheeling gulls, then another and another. Lessing's subordinates were doing their job pumping the crowd. At last, Lessing could let go. The thousand-year Reich had gone off the track, derailed for a space of 144 years, but now it was back on and chugging along strong. It looked as though this Reich would last a while, hopefully forever. That obviously in the viewpoint of Lessing and the Underground Reich. Again, I think this novel is far more than the novel it purports to be. I think it is a blueprint and a manifesto for what is going on and what is going to go on. In that regard, I would note the following. This was sent to me by a member of the listening audience. This is from the online radio that's put out by the National Alliance, the parent organization of National Vanguard Books, who put out Serpent's Walk, Hunter, and The Turner Diaries. William Luther Pierce is the head of the National Alliance, and he is the main commentator on this American Dissident Voices. And this particular talk by Dr. William Pierce is called Remember What Happened to Anwar. By the way, a lot of people tend to dismiss Nazi elements as a bunch of rednecks, etc. But this guy has a Ph.D. He's a very, very formidable and intelligent individual. Notes here, here Pierce is railing against Bill Clinton and against William Cohen, the Secretary of Defense, and is talking about the military rebelling against them. Speaking of the military, William Luther Pierce comments, but Mr. Cohen doesn't get all of them. And some of these people who still do have a sense of right and wrong left in them have had about all they're going to take from the Clintonistas. They've had about all they're going to take of having to fight, of having to accept homosexuals into their ranks, of changing their way of fighting so that women can go into combat with them, of seeing the Constitution they've sworn to defend being subverted and trampled on by the politicians who give them their orders, of carrying out the policies of a government which murders its own citizens wholesale. Hey, Bill, remember what happened to Anwar? You got away with a lot of treason back during the Vietnam War, supporting America's enemies while those enemies were killing our young men over in Vietnam. You've gotten away with a lot more treason during the last 4 years. You think your buddy Cohen has the military people under control, don't you? And that you can get away with whatever you want. Well, believe me, you can't do it. You will find out that not all of the military people you order to back up your atrocious policies are as rotten as you are. One by one they will rebel, and then two by two, and then there will be hell to pay. Not because I predicted it, but because your policies, your treason, your unpunished atrocities made it happen. When it happens, you remember that. Again, note the similarity in tone between the virulent anti-Clinton... note the anti-Clinton tone there. Not altogether dissimilar from what was one is seeing on the so-called mainstream and so-called respectable Republican right. And again, if people think this is nothing but a pipe dream on the part of Dr. Pierce, I would give that more careful consideration under the circumstances. The last item in tonight's discussion comes from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, January 27th of 1998. This is a column by the very conservative San Francisco Chronicle columnist Deborah J. Saunders, last name S-A-U-N-D-E-R-S. It's entitled, Ron Brown's Body Lies A-Moldering. I've discussed in the past my suspicions that, in fact, Ron Brown was murdered, not by Bill Clinton. I do not believe Bill Clinton is in charge of the national security establishment, but rather, I think, by elements that are opposed to Bill Clinton. And in connection with Bill Clinton, the plane crash that killed Ron Brown, apparently some Air Force personnel and officers deliberately disobeyed orders, and those orders would have prevented that crash. That, for anyone familiar with the military, is the ultimate sin in the military. You don't disobey orders. It will get you into serious trouble. Skipping down in Deborah Saunders' column, the Air Force did find that some officers deliberately disobeyed orders that would have prevented the crash. Or, in military speak, quote, understood at the time that the 86th Air Wing was not following the letter of the Air Force instruction, unquote. That's brass E's for disobeying orders. In January, Air Force headquarters denied a request made by the 86th Airlift Wing to forego a safety check before landing in Dubrovnik's airport. Officers consciously disobeyed that order when they approved the Brown flight plan. The Air Force did discipline 16 officers for errors leading to the crash, but the worst punishment meted out involved letters of reprimand. No officer was forced out of the surface or court-martialed. Again, I think that the Serpent's Walk scenario should be very seriously considered. And also note the egg that, to a certain extent, the FBI wound up with it on its face in connection with the Larry Harris incident in February of 1998. In Serpent's Walk, both the FBI and CIA are portrayed as, quote, Jewish, unquote, organizations, and their destabilization and eventual elimination from power is one of the things that paves the way for the Nazi takeover. Again, I think this book is far more than the novel it purports to be. And we've seen Hunter and the Turner Diaries come to reality to a certain extent. I think one should very, very seriously consider the prospect of Serpent's Walk becoming reality as well. A very terrifying prospect, but one that I think needs to be very seriously considered. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.